I think it's hard to be an example of something that you yourself aren't. I'm running bots and I'm able to run thousands of tests over just a few minutes on a huge bucket of stocks.
Hey gang, welcome to the Replace University podcast. As always, I'm your host, Michael Lush. Alongside, I've got my buddy and also a business leader. His name is Matt DeLong. Matt DeLong is part owner of Real Life Trading, which is a day trading course that teaches you how to master the market, do it safely, and do it profitably. So Matt, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. So we were just talking about, you know, doing hard things. You're no stranger to doing hard things. Neither is your business partner. We see him all the time. He's more out in front of social media than you are. You're behind the scenes kind of keeping the glue together. Yep. You're kind of like my Matt Workman. I think everybody needs a Matt in their business.
That's right.
Our business has grown exponentially because you have a different personality like I do, and Matt is my yang to my yin, right?
Yep.
So he's very detail-oriented, very operations-oriented. He keeps the business running and operating together while I go out and do what they call chase unicorns. So that's what you do inside of Real Life Trading. How did you get started to get to the point where you're at now with Real Life Trading?
So I actually started as a customer of Real Life Trading. So around 2015, I had a business that I sold. Mm-hmm. And at the time I had a few hundred thousand dollars invested with a professional money manager.
Yeah.
I won't mention the name.
Yeah.
Raymond James. But after like a few years
lawsuit
of
pending.
Yeah, we'll cut that. Yeah. But after a few years of having a professional money manager, I'm looking at the overall market. I'm like, man, the market's up 10, 15%. Why am I only up 4% every year? And they're like, oh, Matt, you know, it'll average out over time. So I let it go on another year or two. And I'm like, I got another 4%. The market's up another 15. And it just occurred to me that, you know, no one's really going to care about my financial future more than I would. Mm-hmm. And so having conversations with some of these financial gurus, some of these financial planners, they don't really know much at all. All they know how to do is collect my money and give it to a mutual fund company like American Funds.
Yeah.
Right? We'll edit that out. So like, so imagine, Michael, if you hire me as an expert.
Talk about mutual funds, by the way. And I hate to interrupt you because you're in a state of flow, but I also have ADHD. And if I don't get this I will never remember it. Dave Ramsey recently said that 100% of his wealth came from real estate and mutual funds.
Yes.
Not selling Financial Peace University or having a radio show and getting paid $30 million to send people to an exit timeshare company that's Ponzi scheme people out of.
I saw that in the news.
Yeah.
Not that.
100% of his wealth came from mutual funds and real estate?
I have a hard time believing that.
Yeah, yeah. Mutual funds suck.
A little bit of a stretch. So the new way to do it is more of like ETFs, where you can go use your own money. You don't have to pay a fee. You don't have to hire someone, take annual fees. And so what I decided to do was I ended up kind of parting ways with this financial planner. And I decided, hey, I need to learn something about stocks or whatever, investing. And so I ended up taking my LinkedIn profile and I started searching. And I had my assistant at the time search. Who in the Nashville area has the word invest or trading or stock market in their profile?
Yeah.
And I ended up messaging, I don't know, half dozen different people. A few replied. Jeremy did not. Mm-hmm. But I ended up meeting a guy who knew Jeremy personally, who we ended up having a lunch together, and then the rest is history. But I spent a whole lot of time beside Jeremy training for these crazy, ridiculous, mind-numbing endurance events. And so
You had known Jeremy doing this.
So I was a customer of Real Life Trading for several years.
Yeah
And I
thought you were doing all this weird stuff that you guys do together prior to actually joining forces or being a client.
Right So we ended up hearing on this podcast that there's an event coming up, and this is like 2019, called the Everesting. So you climb this mountain enough times that you gain the same simulated elevation gain as Mount Everest, which is 29,029 feet. And so what we did is we ended up spending a lot of time together side by side. We would go to Lifetime Fitness here right around the corner. Mm-hmm. We'd get there at 4 a.m. We'd put in 2 hours straight on the stair machine, take a 20-minute break, do another 2 hours, take an hour lunch, do another 20 minutes, take a 20-minute break. And we would do this and we would be there till midnight.
Yeah.
So 4 a.m. to midnight. And we'd do that several weekends in a row, back to back to back, just training.
Right.
And so I initially had signed up for this event and I tried to find friend, like my normal friend groups, who wants to do this. And what I learned is people look at these endurance events in such a simplistic way. Like, is this fun? Check yes or no. And I'm going to check the no box just alongside everyone else.
Right.
But they're missing the whole point. Yeah. It's not about, is this fun? Yes or no. It's, can I get some really cool mental downloads, aka learn about myself by putting myself through some pain and some difficulty? And as you know, you're no stranger to this, but a few blisters, you know, some tight muscles, that's super temporary. That goes away.
Right.
But the things you learn about yourself far last, you know, that couple of days of maybe discomfort immediately after. And so that began a journey where I was side by side with Jeremy. And at some point, he had a couple business partners at the time. He ended up buying them out. And then I ended up kind of buying into and spending time alongside him, helping build the company. Kind of like what you guys have done, went through some massive growth.
Massive changes and transformation. Yep. So it's almost identical, because I see what's happened with Real Life Trading since you became part owner of it. Same as getting my partner out and allowing, and allowing my existing business partners to come in and take over what I didn't want to do and let them operate inside of their zone of genius.
Yep.
It's been absolutely transformational. And I see it as an outsider looking at Real Life Trading, and I see the same thing. Not only, you know, professionally, but also personally. And I know Jeremy more than I know you, but just, you know, personally seeing Jeremy and the growth that he's had. You guys do some really, I don't want to call it crazy, because I don't want to say I like it,
it's but okay. Crazy's fine.
I get it, right?
Crazy's fine, yeah.
Yeah, but there was one night, this is where I knew you best, was Jeremy and you were doing this, what's it called, Calendar Club, where, you know, day one, you run 1 mile, day two, you run two, three, and so on. And then Jeremy calls me the day before the last day and says, will you run the last day with me? And I was like, are you going in reverse?
Is this the 31 miles or just the 1 mile?
Yeah, 31. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. He's like, no. He's like, I ran half of it this morning. I'm like, still, dude. You know, I was coming, I wouldn't say fresh off of it, but probably a year or more, because I was at one point somewhat addicted to running.
Sure.
Where I was running 4 miles a day, then five. And I tell my wife, like, hey, you got an hour? It's like, I just need to step away from the kids and you. Can you hold the fort down for an hour? Like, what are you going to go do? I was like, I'm going to go run. That was never me. But anyways, this is a year between me being addicted to running to Jeremy and you asking me to come do this. And it was, what did we start at, like 10:30 at night or something like that?
It was late, yeah. It was late by the time we finished.
Yeah. And, you know, Jeremy dusted us. And I think a big part of it was you were just hanging back with me to talk with me and making sure I finished too. So I don't think that, trust me, I knew
what
you
were
doing. No, I think I do know. But, you know, what kind of, I mean, why do you guys do that on such a consistent basis instead of saying, because some people are like, all right, I did it once, I did it, I know I can do it, I learned a lesson, why continuously do it?
So to me, it's really about pushing the boundaries of what you think you're capable of, right? Mm-hmm. So for example, anyone in your group, if we say, hey, we want to meet up 6 a.m. tomorrow, I want you to run half a mile as fast as you can, right? Most people will do some kind of effort. Mm-hmm. We're like, okay, good job. Let's do it again, but this time as fast as you can. And we can agree that the second time, they can probably push a little harder, dig a little deeper, right? And then I say, okay, let me get my pet cheetah. And now your life is on the line.
Yeah.
And now run as fast as you can. And that third time when they're putting it all out there, when it really matters, that's when they really can push themselves. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's really about just being able to push yourself. And that's kind of the value of a coach. A coach is that cheetah who's saying you can do better than you think you can. You can dig deep. You can get into that that reserve tank that some people talk about.
Right.
And especially running, there's runner's highs, there's all kinds of things, but you can really dig deep and push farther than you think you're capable of.
Right.
And so that, obviously, we're talking about sports and athletics and endurance events, but it also kind of transfers and gets into business. Like, hey, maybe this deal is bigger than anything I've ever taken down before. Maybe I'm a little nervous, but wait a sec, over here, I was able to do more than I thought I could. Maybe it applies here.
Right.
And so that's kind of the idea behind it.
Yeah. And by the way, we can edit some of this stuff out. So if you accidentally say a name or a cuss word or something, we can bleep it out and edit it out and all that.
Sure.
And I'll have moments where I was thinking of something as you were talking to ask you, and then totally I'm trying to stay focused on what you're saying. And I'm sure. Like, what was I going to ask him? Which is that moment right now. I did it in the last podcast too. Evan's like, God, you're half retarded.
We'll just play that back real quick so you can regain.
Yeah, no, it was related to that. I know what it was. So, all right, we're ready. Would some people don't even understand personal growth before professional growth? Is there a possibility to have, and I know this is getting deep, right? It's probably not what you signed up for. Is it possible to have professional growth without personal growth first?
I think it's hard to be an example of something that you yourself aren't.
Right.
Right. So like even you were talking before the show about your event, Unleash the Leader training, mm-hmm. and how you had to kind of be the example for everyone right. else. And it might be possible. I think it's very, 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 I think it's a hard sell. Mm-hmm. Like do what I'm telling you to do, not what I'm doing myself.
Yeah.
And so to me, especially like when you have kids and you're trying to show and demonstrate, it's way easier to be the example than to lecture, mm-hmm. and say, here's what you need to do. And, you know, lecture,
yep.
you know, and versus like you inspiring mm-hmm. a certain type of behavior
yeah.
versus lecturing about it.
It's funny you say that because I do certain things because there's this speech that I've probably listened to. And I can't even think of this guy was given a commencement speech for a college. And, you know, he's got several PhDs. His brother's a judge. It's a very famous speech that's out there, and his name escapes me at the moment. But I've watched it so many times. But one part of the speech where he said that the smartest man was a third grade dropout. The wisest sure. man he ever met, which was his dad, was a third grade dropout.
I've heard this, yeah.
Yeah, and part of the story was, you know, he was get up at 3:30 every morning and leave for work, mm-hmm. and his mom would be like, well, why do you get up so early and leave for work sure. or do these things? And he's like, because you never know when one of my sons will catch me in the moment of excellence. Hmm. And he's like, so, you know, he's being the material, right? Yeah. And so that, you know, same thing with me is I do some of these things because, and not only when I do it, part of the motivation while I'm doing it is my kids. I want them to know that daddy can be their hero, right? Sure. I'm not just somebody that sits behind a computer, gets fat, sits on the couch. You know, if there's ever a moment where they needed to be defended, sure. their daddy is more than capable of doing that for them. Sure. I want to be their hero. Because I remember when I was a little kid, me and my brother would share a room because we didn't have a whole lot of money. So anyways, we're sharing a room watching a show, and it was Arnold Schwarzenegger. And you know, I'm 4.5 years younger than my brother, so a lot more immature.
Sure.
But I made the comment, and it's a small house, and my dad's in the next room, or it was very thin walls, so I know he can hear this. And nothing was said in the moment, but now thinking back, I feel terrible about this. And I was like, how cool if he was our daddy.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. And then my brother's like, no. No, our daddy's better than him. So anyways, we had that conversation. And I'm probably 5 or 6 years old at the time, right? And now as an adult, I feel terrible. Like, oh my gosh, because who knows what it would be like to be a son of Arnold Schwarzenegger? It may be terrible. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not going to be the experience I had with my own father.
Sure.
But nonetheless, I don't want my kids being like, man, kind of wish that dude was my dad. I need to be the hero, right? Sure. So that's kind of why I do the things that I do. And that's also what gets me through some of the things that I do.
Sure.
So.
And dad is more than just an ATM machine, right? You're like,
yes. yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Another conversation.
Yeah. 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 Speaking of which, you know, you were saying congratulations earlier. Great newborn, right?
Yeah.
Now he's something's going on, feeling ill or whatnot. It's been a struggle for the last 2 or 3 nights. And I've never, you know, we talk about some of the tough things that we do. And we were talking about this on a previous podcast. I've never witnessed anyone tougher, especially my wife. And I'm sure there's others out there than a woman, especially I've said it in the previous. My wife is not fat. By any stretch of the imagination, she's not a big girl, but she gives birth to giants. We don't know how to have kids that are not large kids. And it was another 10-pound baby
wow.
at home without epidural or anything like that.
Wow.
Yeah. Multiple times now that she's done that. So we talk about all the tough things that we do and the hard things we do.
Sure. That's off to the ladies.
Oh, my goodness.
To the mothers.
And I'm not trying to kiss ass to the ladies out there and whatnot, but, I mean,
it's okay.
It literally is. Like, I just, it's so freaking hard. I mean, just imagine having a kidney stone. That's pretty – I haven't had one. Knock knock on wood that I never get one. But I promise you, I won't be as glamorous as she was when I pass a kidney stone, let alone a 10-pound baby. It's a watermelon, dude.
Yeah.
But it's a miracle to witness it, and it's just it's really cool. I'm so proud of my wife. And again, not trying to kiss your ass. You know, I don't have to, but it's I mean, hats off to the ladies out there. Sure. That and even if you do it at a hospital with an epidural, no shame in that game either.
Sure.
But to do it at home without an epidural, man, it's crazy to witness. It's crazy cool to witness.
Yeah.
So let's talk about real life trading. So you guys educate people how to day trade profitably. Mm-hmm. How do you minimize the risk? What? Because I hear that tossed around too. Because most people, outsiders looking in, are like, day trading, got to have a PhD, got to have a master's to do it. You got to be really smart. You got to have a finance background to learn this stuff.
Right.
And that's just not the case.
It's not the case at all. Yeah. So part of it when it comes to day trading is it's really, and this goes back into endurance sports, is mm-hmm. it's about discipline and it's about confidence. Mm-hmm. So the ideal way to like manage risk is you have a predefined dollar amount that you're willing to lose if you're wrong. Mm-hmm. So it could be $50, it could be $5,000, it can be whatever dollar amount. And obviously it's going to be a percentage of your account, usually 1%, give or take. So if you have a $100,000 account, you're able to risk $1,000. So if you're wrong, you lose $1,000. If you're mm-hmm. right, you make more than that. So okay. you make so 1.2.
Stop right there.
Yep.
Some people are like, oh, day trading is risky. I could lose it all like that. So what you're saying is that's not the case. Right. That would take 100 days, or actually,
you have to have 100 losing trades in a row.
Yeah.
Right. But the cool part is, last May we launched a funded account program. Mm-hmm. So instead of you even risking $100,000 of your own money, you can spend $1,000 and get a funded account program where we mm-hmm. do a 75-25 split. The rule is you have to grow that account 10%, which mm-hmm. isn't hard. I actually had bots do that for me many times already, and so. Grow at 10%, the money becomes real, and then we do a 75-25 mm-hmm. split. You can pay a little extra and do a 90-10 split, so you keep mm-hmm. the bigger share. And so that the idea is we're trying to remove all of the reasons, obstacles, mm-hmm. the you know excuses for why people can't be successful. Right. I don't have money. I don't know what to do. Well, we give away it's so much free content, tons of free stuff.
Yes,
we give you capital. We'll show you how to do it. We'll give you the money to do it. Like, what other reasons are there? Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it's just time. Well, we have bots that do things now. Like, so we're trying to remove all those excuses that people have why they can't be successful, right?
So but they're just not. Just because they sign up for the course doesn't mean that they're given $100,000 to trade with. Don't they have to qualify or prove themselves to?
So that's the rule. You have to grow at 10% without breaking the rule. So that's kind of the audition stage, right? And so you grow at 10% and then the money becomes real. So
10% over what time frame?
There's no minimum, there's no maximum days. So it's just 10%. It could be 2 days, it could be years. There are some prop firms programs where you have at least 30 days, but no more than 60. Well, that's a whole nother twist to, you can't be too slow, but you can't be too fast and too aggressive or too conservative. So,
And I have witnessed this even inside of our own organization. When you talk about, when it comes to trading, being a successful trader is confidence and discipline, because we have witnessed what happens with a lack of confidence when they start second guessing themselves, because we've had internal day traders doing Forex. Jeremy's come in to consult with them and just make sure behind the scenes they got a good game plan. And the game plan on paper looks good.
Sure.
The execution, however, was totally different, and it was a lack of confidence.
Sure.
And I started noticing that the game plan was changing because every time they had a loss, it was a blow to their confidence. So therefore, they would change the game plan. The next thing you know, they get another loss, another loss, another loss, another loss. And so it's weird where, you know, you from an outsider perspective, you would look at day trading and be like, okay, this is reading charts. It's mathematical. It's making very calculated risk.
Sure.
And no one talks about capital management or how confidence and mental aptitude or mental discipline plays a huge part in being successful.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And part of the way I always think about it, or if you think about it like a small business would, your wins are kind of like your revenue and your losses are like your expenses.
Operating.
And so sometimes you might have a whole slew of expenses come in before another check, client check or credit card deposit comes in, right?
Yep.
And so just getting used to, you know, I'm never going to have a business that has all revenue and no expenses. I'm not going to waste any time trying to figure out how to do that, right? Mm-hmm. And so trading very much is a game of confidence, because when you put a trade on, everyone assumes there's this correlation between the trade starts working immediately and it's going to be profitable overall. There's zero correlation. Just like the person who's in first place on the first minute of a marathon is not at all correlated to who's going to be the final winner at the end. But people think, oh, it has to be this way. It doesn't have to.
Right.
And so what you have to do is be comfortable with a trade that starts losing right away, which happens. And maybe it goes almost immediately against you and you're still in the trade. You're hanging on by a little thread. Like that risk is almost about to get, you know, punch the ticket and you're out of the trade. You lost 1%. No big deal. But there's plenty of times where it comes really close and most people would panic.
Yeah.
They say, I'm going to close the trade down, and then it goes and hits your target. Mm-hmm. And so what I try to teach people is there's a difference. I call it me versus my BS. Mm-hmm. Me, what am I doing versus the BS is the base strategy. What should I be doing? What is the base strategy tell me I should be doing?
Oh,
so
okay.
If I stay in the trade and the base strategy says stay in the trade. And then, if my fear, something takes over and I'm like, I'm going to bail. It's too much pain. Can't handle the pressure, aka learning to be calm in the middle of chaos,
right.
Endurance events, cramping, all the things that happen, right? So you learn to stay calm in that and just let it play out. And I've seen so many times people panic and they actually end up causing the thing that they don't want to happen.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So so things like risking $1,000 to make $1,200. Mm-hmm. So it's like a 20% more than what you're risking. You could almost be down, let's say, $800 on a trade. And you're like, you know what? I did everything exactly to the book. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. There's nothing else you can do different, right? Mm-hmm. If you did it, it just doesn't work. And so what a lot of people get stuck on is they try to win on every trade.
Yeah.
So they try to win every time. What you should be focused on is winning over time. It's a huge difference. Like, I don't really care about any one individual trade. Let's look at a bucket of 50 or 100. I want those to work. It doesn't really each individual.
What's a good percentage? I guess what you would call a win rate. So out of those 50 trades, what percentage for a good trader?
So it depends on when you win, how much you win in. So the win rate is like half the equation, but typically anything more than 55%, even if for every dollar you risk, you make a dollar, 55% is decent odds.
Profitable.
Right. And there's other business models like venture capital have a very low win rate, but when they win 12,000, 1,200, 120,000%, but they have plenty of total losses, $100 million bite-sized checks, loss. Google and Amazon, huge winners that more than pay for the losses, right?
Yeah. Sure. What I also found was cool is a huge testimony to real life trading is anytime, because we kind of cross-pollinate our audiences. And so you guys have an audience that isn't aware of us. You guys know what to do with capital. We know how to find them capital, right? Sure. Which now you guys know how to find them capital too, free money. You just trade with somebody else's money. Yep. But we cross-pollinate, and one of the cool testimonials that we always get from your audience that's coming over to ours is, well, what do you do? And by and large, not all the time, sometimes it's just more of a side hustle, but by and large, it's like, I'm a trader. That, to me, that's a huge testimonial, because that's what you're trying to teach people to do is how to be a successful trader. And these people are not having a W-2 job. They're not working a side gig over here or delivering pieces. They're like, well, I trade. That's really freaking cool.
Yeah.
So that's a huge testimonial.
It's awesome.
It's also a different lifestyle. So Jeremy was here last week. I think it was last Thursday, and he got to the office before I did. And so he's in the bar filming. I think you guys have a trading room for Tesla, which is a whole nother ball of wax. But, we'll talk about
Tesla
that.
Tesla Titans,
so,
yep.
Yeah, so you don't have to say, okay, well, I want to be a day trader. I got to go out and master Forex. I got to go out and do commodities and equities and collars and options and all this. Like, you guys teach people that if you want to, pick your poison or your pleasure of let's get laser focused on one thing. And I was talking to him and he's like, yeah, it's just Tesla room. All we do is trade Tesla. Mm-hmm. I was like, imagine that. So instead of me trying to all the equity
news, what's happening in the market,
I got to find winners and read charts from everyone. It's like, all I got to do is just figure out Tesla and you can make money when it goes up or down. Yeah. Here lately, holy crap. I've been Edmund, who's buddies with Jeremy Ritz, and Jeremy Ritz is obviously with Replace Your Dollar, told me, he's like, dude, Tesla's about to pop. I looked at a chart over the last month. They were not wrong. And it's not a guess. It's there's a science to this, right?
Right. Yep.
So, I mean, I've heard the term thrown out Fibonacci, and I don't know that that's even relevant for what you guys do, but in a layman's term, what are you really looking at when you look at a chart?
So it really depends for each person. Mm-hmm. I actually have a little different perspective than Jeremy. I'm more considered a systematic, like rules-based trader. Jeremy's more of a intuition, gut feeling. And so more people that are more like free spirits migrate to more like Jeremy. More that are more engineering, like rules-based, logical, migrate to usually like my style. Yeah. And so they're very different styles. Looking at the same things. And so I've literally heard Jeremy's like, this obvious place where you would buy. I'm like, are we looking at the same? Like, what's so obvious, right? Yeah. We just have different perspectives. And so at the end of the day, it's really just reading the candlesticks and the sentiment. And sometimes there's moving averages. It's very simple things that help you kind of narrow out and smooth out all the craziness movements.
Yeah.
One of the things I do is I actually have bots that I've created. I have about a dozen different bots. And so I'm running bots and I'm able to run thousands of tests over just a few minutes on a huge bucket of stocks that also work in our funded accounts, which you can get, you know, as little as $500. You can get a $50,000 trading account and it'll also help you get funded. It'll help you grow that 10% rule.
Oh, wow.
So part of what I do is I'm running tons of tests and automated back tests that will look at, hey, there's certain probabilities, like this strategy works really well on Tesla on Mondays and Tuesdays, and that's it. So then I'm gonna run that on Mondays and Tuesdays. Like without hesitation, it's gonna do it automatically. I can be on a yacht in Croatia. I can be at Abundance in the British Virgin Islands alongside Jeremy and Edmund, and my Jeremy as well. And so the thing that I'm looking at is really the statistics and the probabilities of a certain strategy against a certain chart, a certain ticker. And that could be gold, that could be oil, that could be Tesla, it could be AMD, it could be NVIDIA, it could be all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's kind of, I look at it very differently than Jeremy does.
One of the things that's appealing, at least for me, and I would imagine for a lot of the people watching or listening, is the lifestyle, right?
Sure.
The lifestyle that you guys have versus the lifestyle that I have is completely different. You know, me having to operate, manage sales, personnel, employees, and all that. A day trader, you don't have to have any employees.
Yeah.
And, you know,
when to fire or hire.
Right. You know, we talk about Jeremy. Jeremy, a year ago, not Jeremy Newsom, but Jeremy Ritz, a year ago was a high school principal. Turned in his resignation and said, this is what I'm going to cut my teeth on. This is what I'm going to learn.
Yep.
And then, you know, we don't have to tell exactly what the numbers were. But 2 weeks ago, he made about 4 to 5 times in 2 days what he makes an entire year as a high school principal up in Delaware. Right. But what did he really purchase by cutting his teeth and learning this and getting this skill set? Was he actually, it wasn't the income, is what he acquired back, which is time.
Time freedom.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you do some really cool stuff, but Jeremy's like, I'm going to spend the month RVing, right? You just shut it down.
Yeah, 2 months, yeah.
So having said all that, you know, we've kind of structured the business that on the executive team, November and December, we just shut it off. Now, the business still runs. We still got sales and account executives and BDRs doing what they do and the marketing team doing what they're doing. But we need to get everything done. No different than we don't have a 5-day work week. We have a Monday through Thursday work week because who doesn't like a 3-day work weekend?
Sure.
Everybody. So we own the business. The business doesn't own us. Sure. We create a 3-day or sorry, a 4-day work week, which means we have to be laser focused because our competition does 5, 6, 7-day work weeks. That's not the purpose of us owning a business. Sure. We have families and we want to spend the time there. So no different than we have a 4-day work week. We want a 10-month work schedule.
Right.
So we want to shut it down November and December, and we're on target to do so. But my goal is, all right, November, December, I want to learn what you know. Now, I'm not going to learn it at the level that you now know it, but I can at least get the basics and start getting in the game. Because I ain't going to lie, I got FOMO. The lifestyle that you guys have versus the lifestyle I have, the difference is not necessarily the income, it's the time and the cool stuff that you guys do. So you talked about a yacht in Croatia. You guys got back, what was it, 2 weeks ago?
Yep.
Yeah. So you guys spent a week in Croatia. What all did y'all do?
On a yacht, yeah. So it was we
not
chartered
a small one either.
A chartered 170-foot yacht.
Yeah.
It had 18 individual bedrooms and bathrooms.
Yeah.
And it came with 9 crew. So it came with a captain, bartender, waiter, housekeeper, all the things. And so what we did was we all landed in Split, Croatia, which is there's one big marina there. And what we did is we left and we hit a different port every afternoon. So we went north and hit different, some were islands, some were just cities along the coast. And so we would have breakfast and lunch on board. Usually in the afternoon, there's a water sports. They call it a swim stop. So they drop anchor. We get the jet ski off the top of
How's the water this time of year?
It's a little chilly.
Okay.
Yeah. So the Mediterranean is always a little chilly. Just even in the summer, it's a little chilly. Okay. But I'm not a stranger to discomfort. So, the crew would get the jet ski out. They had e-foil. And if you've ever done e-foil,
I've seen it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah. And so we basically have like 2 hours of just swim stop. Sometimes it's an island, it's a cove, it's somewhere. Then we get back on the boat, eat lunch, and then usually pulling into port around 3 or 4 in the afternoon. Yeah. And then we'll stay there until usually 9 or 10 the next morning. And then so we have breakfast and lunch on board, dinner free to explore. And then one of the crew members on board is a cruise director. So he's like, hey, we're going to be coming into, and there's a TV just like this. He's like, we're coming into this stop. Here's the top 3 restaurants, the top 4 things to do. And he would say, hey, raise a hand. Who needs an Uber? Who needs a shuttle? And they'd arrange all that for us. And so we're literally exploring new towns, new sites. My wife and I went to vineyards. Mm-hmm. We rented scooters and drove all along the coast. We did all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Really fun. So.
And while you're doing that, are you making money?
My robots are, absolutely.
That's what I say. It's just a difference in lifestyle.
It is.
Yeah. You know, a lot of times I find myself working in the business as opposed to on the business. And, I don't want to sit here and complain because I'm very fortunate. And especially with the team that I have, you know, the last 2 weeks I just spent at home with the wife and the baby, helping her and him get acclimated to life now outside of the womb. but, you know, so I don't want to sound like I'm ungrateful, but there's levels to this, right? And the level that you guys are at and the lifestyle that you have, it's just two different business models where, again, that's why I want to dig into this in November and December and not necessarily master it, but just get my foot in the water and start swimming. And you can't be in the game. It's kind of like, you know, with Jeremy's trade 2 weeks ago where, you know, he made more money in 2 days than in the 4 or 5 years of being a principal. That's not normal, and that's not what we're saying. Is you start doing this, you're going to have $500,000 days. This was not normal. I think even Jeremy said this is like a once in a lifetime, maybe even a once in a century trade that happened. Sure. But to that testament, though, you got to be in the game to even win.
Sure,
right? Yeah. It's like, you know, my mom, she calls the lottery a poor tax, and I still buy lottery tickets. Now, do I think I'm going to win? No, but I do know that if I don't buy a lottery ticket, there's no chance of me winning.
0-10, yeah.
But the purpose of me buying a lottery ticket, and I only do it when it gets above $300 million, is once I buy the lottery ticket, I look at it, and I think about the actual money. And I'm like, okay, $300 million, what does life look like? What am I doing? What am I owning? What kind of impact am I having on the world?
And Uncle Sam thanks you for his piece.
Yeah, it is a poor tax because mostly it's poor people that buy lottery tickets.
Once you win the $300 million, the tax, you pay all that.
Yeah. Yes, yes. But it is programming my brain to start thinking at that level, and then it becomes, okay, well, anything less than that is just unacceptable. And now that's the new target is that I got to move forward to.
Sure.
But it's just, it's a really cool lifestyle that you guys have. But it's not just about you guys personally making money as a company or individuals. And you are helping other people. But what I realized on this trip was you guys are actually connected to some people that I was connected to and not knowing it, like Harold Cox.
Oh, yeah.
So tell me about Aerial Recovery.
Yeah. So we started Real Life Foundation, which is our nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And every year we designate a benefactor, which is Aerial Recovery this year in 2023. And usually when we do our live events, we usually do 3 or 4 a year. One is international, and then usually 2 or 3 here. Nashville, typically we do in September. But this year we've been to Vegas. We were in Orlando, Margaritaville two weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And so we do these live events where we're training, but we also do a fundraiser. We kind of bundle those together. Mm-hmm. And so when we were in Croatia, we did a fundraiser again. And so people on board were like, hey, who wants to donate, you know, coaching programs, one-on-ones, any kind of bundled services, including like, hey, who wants to rent a penthouse in Miami, downtown Miami, you know, for a week. And so people will donate these things and then we'll right there do an auction. And people's like, oh, is this a silent auction? I'm like, no, actually, it gets quite rowdy.
Yeah.
It's very spirited. And right. Jeremy's like, okay, Michael, you got this. And Edmund, you won this. And it's very fun and interactive. Mm-hmm. And we've learned the secret is hand out champagne.
Yeah, that's true.
Get people liquored up and they're so much more generous. But we ended up raising between the Aero Recovery has a they have a war room program where you're mm-hmm. donating a certain amount every year for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And so between that and our actual auction, we were able to raise a little over $315,000 just at that one event.
Wow.
And for those of you who don't know, I'm not an official Aero Recovery spokesperson, but they have three different programs. Mm-hmm. One is disaster relief and recovery. So mm-hmm. earthquakes, tornadoes, hurricanes, volcanic eruptions, mudslides. They're kind of like first responders. Mm-hmm. And they do this all 100% self-financed. And they go literally all over the world. So when the war in Ukraine broke out, they ended up being on the ground like 10 days later. And so they were helping with the recovery effort. They ended up dragging out there, finding a woman who was like 8 months pregnant and her 2-year-old, literally on day 10 after they said the chance of survival is nothing or little yeah. to nothing. They actually found someone outside the odds of what you think, you know, how long you can survive.
That right there is worth $300,000, if not more.
Yeah.
Just exactly. that one act. That's incredible.
Yeah.
But it's the makeup of them too, because isn't the bulk of them former operators mm-hmm. as well?
That's right. So they have a program called Heal the Heroes.
Yeah.
And what they do is they try to, they find veterans who are maybe struggling to get back into the swing of the normal life after mm-hmm. the military. Let's mm-hmm. say they're retired or discharged somehow. And so what they do is they have a program where you have to be nominated, and it starts with a week on the island, and mm-hmm. then has a 1-year follow-up process. And so what they do is they kind of show veterans, mostly special forces, hey, mm-hmm. even though you've had $13 million of personal training and helicopters and all specialized training,
right?
You know. Paratrooping, like all the things, right?
Right?
Even though you've done that, and even though you're retired, the military is like, thank you, we don't need you anymore, and you yep. feel like you don't have a purpose.
Yeah.
And veterans, I forget the exact statistic, but something like every 82 seconds, one takes their own life because mm-hmm. there's this connection between not having a purpose and
right.
suicide, right?
Right.
And so when you help them say, hey, you have value still, you know, you're kind of repurposing, hey, you're not in the military carrying weapons on the battlefield anymore, but all this specialized training you've had, you can go do disaster relief.
Yeah. Right?
You can help, help pass out waters. You can help roofs, help pull mm-hmm. people out of rubble. You can do all kinds of things. And so that's kind of what the Heal the Heroes program is people are nominated and they do a platoon. They're just starting off platoon 4. So it's 25 guys on the island, then a week long out. Once you just go back home and they mm-hmm. have spouses calls, they have all kinds of stuff
yeah.
that they do to help these struggling veterans see that they have a purpose mm-hmm. outside of the military and help, you know, make a difference in the world.
So. Yeah. And it's not just recovery, like humanitarian, but one thing that I'm kind of drawn towards is the sex trafficking piece.
Human trafficking. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they got a program where they're going in around the world and kicking in doors and freeing people from sex trafficking.
They do.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, I'm, you know, watching, I got FOMO, you know, Jeremy was asking me to go to Croatia, and I'm like, it's not as easy for me as it is for you. One, my wife's pregnant, and she ended up having a baby while you guys were out there.
Sure.
So I wasn't attending, but, you know, my buddy, Harold, I noticed, it was like, he's in Croatia. I was like, what is the chances Harold's in Croatia the same time my buddy Jeremy is?
Yeah.
Then I look at his hat and his Area Recovery, and I'm yeah. like, holy crap, I didn't know you were a part of Area Recovery as well.
Yeah.
And Harold's an awesome,
cool
badass.
Dude, yeah.
He's a really cool dude. He used to be my coach down at Tennessee Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Academy.
Oh,
one
awesome.
Of my coaches.
Small world.
Yeah, and he was a cool one too.
Awesome.
And you can get some coaches that are not cool.
Sure.
But, you know, you're a white belt. And at the time, Harold, he's a black belt now, but he was a purple belt. But sometimes you can get a purple belt that when you're a white belt, all they want to do is just smash you, right? Like, yeah, I'm a purple belt. This is what we do yeah. to white belts.
Sure.
That's not Harold at all. That's not
awesome.
His personality. It's like he would let me get in. And when I say I'm a big dude and probably a little bit, I'm not built like Harold, but I'm bigger and heavier than
sure.
than Harold. He would let me get into certain positions because when you're at his level, that doesn't happen by accident.
Sure.
Like he's letting me do that
sometimes.
To either, yeah. And when I say not win, I didn't win any fight, maybe get in a position so that one, it kind of challenges him, but
sure.
two, it allows me to kind of learn. And, you know, he's instead of talking trash, he's kind of coaching me through, like, yeah, you didn't really want to do that. And here's why. Oh, yeah, that, yeah, I could have died right there. I appreciate it for not killing me. He's just a solid
awesome.
Dude and one of my favorite people. At my time at Tennessee Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Academy. So, Shout out to Harold Cox, man. You're an awesome badass. You rock,
Harold. Yeah. And yeah. It was crazy. Is I met him on the other side of the world. First time. And he lives 5 minutes down the road from me.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was pretty wild.
Crazier story, right? I was on the hunt for an executive assistant because out of all the assistants we have, I'm terrible with assistants. Like, we'll hire one. And then Matt does a better job of directing them, so they become Matt's assistant. Then I'll hire one, and then Derek does a better job with assistants, so they become a marketing assistant.
That's right.
And then we have VA, so I'm terrible at assistants. So finally, the company's like, we need one that only focuses on you because you have massive ADHD. You go down these rabbit holes and chase ideas, which is good for the company, but sure, it needs to be channeled, right? So we need somebody to kind of help you because you're trying to do everything. It's like yesterday they were having BDR meetings. BDR is business development reps. So Matt's in his office and he's talking to the BDRs, and I find, like, man, I've never attended one of those meetings. So I hop in there. Well, what do? I distract the meeting. I want to say hello because they're people that work for the company and I want them to see my face and know that I'm involved. But I constantly find myself getting distracted in the weeds of all this stuff. So, like, you've got to hire an executive assistant and she's only going to work for you and only focus on all the things that you try to get done in a day. So I hire her. Her name's Laura. Guess who her next door neighbor is?
Harold.
Harold Cox. Yeah. And so I think they're best friends. The two wives are best friends. And they live in the same neighborhood. And they're next door. And I was like, oh, my goodness, I knew Harold. So anyways, it's just small world. Yeah. Now we're all so interconnected.
That's awesome. And part of the cool part about doing our fundraisers is that we actually invite someone to come hang out with us during our event. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times when you're doing fundraisers, they send a spokesperson, they kind of parachute in, do their little discussion, raise money, and then disappear.
Right.
And you don't really get to know them.
Right.
But we've found that once you get to know someone, hang out, share, you know, I've had pizza with Harold alongside the coast of Croatia, like, get to know them and their story and how this role impacts their life and their family and all the things, the difference it makes in their life, and how excited they are to share the message with other people, including real life trading. Mm-hmm. Harold's a big common evangelist about real life trading.
Yeah.
And so that's super important to have, at least for us when we do these events, to have a live person there to represent the company.
Yeah, it's easy to kind of support something from a distance and say, hey, I support them and I feel good. I get good vibes and good... Mm-hmm. Good character points for myself, right?
That's what we want to get to know them, right?
Yeah. So, but if you actually get to know somebody, now it's a little bit more personal. You want to celebrate their wins, and you want, you're more about the mission, because the more you help the mission, you're also helping this person that's connected about the mission and so on. So,
In Orlando, when we did our real life trading event at the Margaritaville in Orlando, we had the one and only Jeremy Locke, which is Brittany Turner's husband, who oversees aerial development, come and tell his story about, you know, all the things he's had to go through in the military and the training. And, you know, at dinner, he tells these crazy, wild stories like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe that. That's a real thing that happened. And that's kind of the get to know you type thing. You know, we could easily go find, you know, just cancer research, some generic company to support. But we want that personal connection where we can really get to know them. And that helps us, like, raise money for them, tell the story, right? And people, you're kind of mingled among them right, over a period of days or weeks.
And I know it's cliche to say, but none of this exists without what they do in the world.
Sure.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about just aerial recovery. I'm talking about the military and the veterans. I mean, none of this exists without us. In fact, what is today? 2 days ago? We would all be speaking German if it wasn't for a bunch of badasses in 1944 that knew that when they exited that boat, there was a high probability that they were going to get sawed in half by those howitzers and everything else that was in the hornet's nest. But I saw a picture because a buddy of mine posted a picture of them in the boats about to launch, and there was a bunch of smiles. Not all smiles. None of them were fear. It was a bunch of smiles. And it's like, dude, that's a different generation of badasses.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's completely extinct, but if we don't do something quick, it will be extinct, because they had smiles on their face knowing there's impending doom. That they had to, and the only way, there was two ways to really take advantage of these hornet's nests that had these guns that are just literally, you know, they're 7.62 rounds that are just sawing bodies in half and limbs. The only way to get there was, one, storm the beach. But two, these guns were shooting at a rate so rapid that the muscles would get hot and actually melt.
Cool down,
so they would have to let them cool down, and that was systematically ways that they could get up there.
Sure.
But the people that are in there, you had to be face-to-face to get to remove the threat. And it's just, man, you know, where is that generation gone that – You know, 2 days ago, 2 days ago was the anniversary of D-Day in 1944, which is now, what, 79 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, just badasses that we absolutely, and if it wasn't for them, you and I are speaking German on this podcast. Right. If a podcast exists in this country, right?
We're given permission to have a podcast.
Right.
Yeah. If you're given permission to have your own company.
Or to speak right. freely. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, so I don't say we owe it all to them, but a lot of why we exist and do what we're capable of doing is because of them. So no better charity that I can think of. And you know, again, I got FOMO there because we have a charity too, Heart of Champion Sports. I'm not saying it's inferior. It's just different, and because we align differently, and I kind of align more to that. But Heart of Champion Sports is getting to kids, because I was a former athlete, getting to kids and getting to their heart and their character first before it's too late. And it's not just in high school, but sometimes and even in middle school. But, you know, it's in the AAU ranks, these elite athletes that, you know, may not have the family background that I had and the blessings that I had going through life.
Sure.
In these colleges now, sometimes being an athlete may be their only opportunity to escape the circumstances that they're in.
Sure.
And they may not have the best role models inside of their household or even inside of their their neighborhoods to give them a really good influence. So these colleges are not just watching what happens on the court. They're now, they have scorecards and data that they're collecting to see how they interact off the court. Hmm. So when these recruiters show up to these gyms and watch a game, when you're not in the game, how are you interacting with your coach? How are you interacting with your teammates? What are some of your friends saying about you? So they'll interview your friends. So it's character.
Wow.
So Heart of Champion Sports is kind of getting to the heart of these kids first and making sure they're developing character on and off the court or field. And it doesn't have to just be basketball because that's what I'm related to. But in a, I don't want to call it, for lack of better words, a manipulative way, finding a way to also share the gospel with them because that's really where the heart lies. So anyways, shout out to Heart of Champion Sports. So it's one that we're aligned with, but I want to get more involved with Area Recovery as well. Just started following Jeremy on Jeremy Locke on Instagram. So maybe you give me a follow back of the 1,000 people that I have following me personally.
Yeah. And it is interesting that you guys are taking that approach because it seems like we're in a world where like common sense is kind of going out the window. We're all about feelings. And it's like, you hurt my feelings. And so therefore you need to change this person so you don't hurt my feelings. It's like, I don't know what kind of generation we're raising where everyone is like, who can be the biggest victim, right?
Oh,
who and it's just like, it's a whole nother podcast, maybe episode. But I don't know how America can ever unwind from this unless you don't champion some of this just bizarre behavior and call that heroic. And
we were talking about it on a previous podcast, and maybe it wasn't a podcast, maybe it was some short form content that we were doing, but we call it Christian masculinity. Like, it's okay to be a Christian and masculine.
Sure.
Being a Christian doesn't mean you always have to turn the other cheek, nor does it mean you have to lash out in violence either, but there's a time and place for things. And, you know, some of us in this population are allowing our kids to not be tough. And it was on the topic of, you know, bullying situation in school. We homeschool, but we also send our kids to tutorials.
Sure.
And my kids, at a certain tutorial, when they are in at first grade, they have to learn at a third grade level because they lump them all in one class. So instead of everybody having to go down and learn at a first grade level, everybody has to rise up to the third grade level. So if you're a third grader, you just got more responsibility in terms of homework and mentoring the younger kids. And then, you know, at a fourth grade level, you have to learn at a sixth grade level because they lump them all into one class. And it's only 4 hours, so you got to be really efficient. So some people kind of will talk about homeschoolers, how they're socially awkward and don't have the level of education that you would in a public school. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. And I hate to brag, but my kids are learning at a sixth grade level when your kids are learning at a fourth grade level and they're flunking. So anyways, we were on the topic of bullying, sixth grader, somewhat bullying my fourth grader. Okay, well, I'm not going to reach out to the teacher and be like, hey, this needs to stop. You know, that's not the way it was done in my day. And my dad had two rules. You go to school, don't pick a fight. And if you don't pick a fight and somebody starts a fight, you better win. And if you pick a fight, you better finish the fight because if you don't, I'm going to come home, or when I do come home, you're still getting a whipping because you never pick a fight. But if somebody picks a fight, you better finish it.
Sure.
So he only had very simple rules, right?
Red fist, yep.
Yeah. I'm not saying that that's the right way. That was the way that I was brought up and taught. Sure. And I'm hoping to take a little bit of that and expand on it and improve it. But instead of going to the teacher, I was explaining to my son, like, okay, we're not tattletales. This isn't what we're going to do. This is what we're going to do. And it wasn't, hey, tomorrow at school, I want you to, because some of the advice I got as a kid was you walk up and you punch them dead in the nose.
Sure.
It was, this is how you handle it. And what it was just being assertive and being confident in yourself and saying, hey, I don't appreciate this. Don't continue to do this. If you continue to do this, there will be consequences and repercussions.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. And I said, and sometimes, especially when it comes to bullies, that's all that ever has to happen. Sure. And even when you're in your, even in your 40s, you come across people that interact a certain way. And we have it in our sphere of influence too, that we've got this individual that talks to women and treats women a certain way. And, you know, as a collective group, we kind of talked about it. And I said, and a lot of people don't view the world through my lens.
Sure.
And the way that I look at it is problem solving. And I says, if it happens in my presence, I said, I can fix the problem really quick. You guys are wanting to have these interactive groups and, you know, have a sit down and all this. I said, that's fine and well. And it may work over time. But I promise you the quickest way to get the result is if it happens in my presence, I'm going to take care of it really quick. So it's just a different viewpoint on the world. So I've been explaining to my son, this is how you do it. And that's how you do it the first, maybe even the second time.
Sure.
But you don't allow it a third time. And a third time is you need to demonstrate Christian masculinity where you have to protect yourself. This cannot continue to happen.
Sure.
And again, bullies, they tend to do it. They only pick on the people that they feel are cowards or weak, right? The first time you smack a bully in the nose, they're shell-shocked. They don't know what to do. No one's ever done this to me.
Yeah.
I remember growing up, I had one much bigger than me. Bart, if you're out there, you know who you are. We're some friends to this day, but I couldn't tell you how many fights we got into as kids. He was always bigger than me. He was a little bit older than me. He matured before I did, and he was a bully. But there was every time it just got to that point, I smacked him in the nose. Guess what the first thing was he did? Cried. It wasn't fight back.
Yeah.
It was to cry.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't be scared of bullies because they're typically the weaker people in the room.
That's awesome. I actually had two daughters. One went through homeschooling from 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. Mm-hmm. And she was more social than our other daughter who went through the whole public school and had 1,500 students in the school. So I absolutely know what you mean by that. So
No one can meet my kids. And here's the thing. It's not just because we're different or we do homeschooling better, which is why everybody's going to brag about their kids. And we're always biased about their kids. But my kids do not meet strangers, especially my six-year-old. My goodness, he will talk your head off. In fact, his favorite thing is to come to this office and talk to people that are trying to make sales on the phone. He's just talking to them. Well, why do you do this? Why do you do that? Hey, can you take me to the vending machine? Because my daddy won't buy me candy. Can you? So, I mean, he's very social. But the way I look at it is, if you're socially awkward, it doesn't matter if you're homeschooled or in traditional school. You're just going to be socially awkward. And there's nothing wrong about being socially awkward. We were talking, I had a meeting earlier this morning about somebody that we're about to start doing business with. And they're on the spectrum for sure, whether it's Asperger's or all. And I'm not here to diagnose anybody, but we were even prefaced like, look, it's just different. Socially awkward. It's for some people, depending on how you view the world, like for instance, Derek, it's painful. He's like, because Derek wants to get to the end result as quickly as possible.
Sure.
Me, it's entertainment, right? So I don't mind it. But anyways, this person has a skill set that is extremely valuable. I mean, NSA type stuff where, you know, from a marketing perspective, he has a program where we know if this subset of audience works on the third floor of a building but doesn't have a view. And when they leave their office, they go to the gas station and always use their Amex card. I mean, that type of data is stuff that he can extract, which from a business perspective, if you're trying to market online, is insanely valuable, right? So, you know, don't diminish somebody because they're socially awkward. Sure. We have another buddy.
Most programmers are that way too, right?
Yes. Software CPAs. I mean, how many beers have you had with a CPA? Not many, but
anyways. And how do you know when a CPA is outgoing? It's when they look at your shoes, not their own, right?
So speaking of that, we got I would call him a buddy. He actually went through our program too, ULW, and most people were like, I can't get along with him. He's socially awkward. And this dude knows the tax code by heart, like at the back of his hand. He's just really good. He's a genius at it. And it's all about perspective. I'm like, you guys look at it like, you know, he needs to be like you. I look at it like, this dude's got way more depth to him than you do. And he, for me, sure. It's entertaining. Do you know Chris Robinette?
I do. He was in Croatia.
That's right. Yeah, duh. Okay, so he's my financial planner, right? And, you know, some people are like, this dude is loud and obnoxious, right? He's one of my best friends. He entertains me. I get him. There's more to Chris Robinette than this loud, outlandish Preds fan that doesn't have a filter, whether in front of kids or women or anything else. Like, I get him. He's entertaining. Sure. So different strokes for different folks. Yep. All right. Any parting words?
No, I would ask you a question.
Yeah.
What is one attribute, one thing that you can... that you think is a good success predictor in business or anything? What can you boil it down to? One thing, one character.
One thing. Yeah. Do you have? And maybe the way I explain this sounds like it's more than one thing. It may sound like a politician where I take this one thing and make it a multitude of things. For me personally, is when things are tough, I have been really good about putting myself in a corner. It's almost like a caged animal, where I will do things and say, this is what I'm going to do. And if I don't do it, it's actually the fear of not getting it done because I put it out to the world. The embarrassment of it is far more painful than actually not achieving the goal. So an example was when I started off right out of college in the mortgage business, I wanted to land the job and the interview. So I asked the senior vice president, who was the best person here last year? They said it was this person. This is the award she won. I said, I will double that person's production. And I just wanted to land the job. Now, sure. Did I have so much confidence in myself that I would actually do that? No, I just wanted to land the job. But then that did. It landed me the job. I got the interview. But now I had to actually perform.
Yeah.
And that was now put out because he's also the type of individual. He's not going to hold that a secret. He's going to let everybody else know that I said this too. So he's telling Natalie Webb over here. He's like, oh, by the way, you got this guy that just came in. He says he's going to double your production. Yeah. It would have been, to me, so embarrassing to not actually do it than not realizing the results of achieving that goal, right? Sure. That was more of a motivator.
Sure.
That, and I did. So
it was kind of like a transparent accountability kind of thing.
Yeah. So put it out there. And, you know, in a sense, it's just never give up, especially from a business perspective.
Sure.
Things change. Markets shift. There are inflection points, all kinds of things. Stay the course and just don't give up. That's why so many people find it hard to become an entrepreneur because you have to be extremely flexible. Mm-hmm. Things are going to happen. There's going to be a lawsuit. There's going to be a complaint, or you're going to have this opportunity. And then there's an inflection point. I've always said you're one relationship away from a massive inflection point. You know, from a marketing perspective, we had one relationship. Boom. He takes our CPA from 5,000 CPA, which is atrocious given the ticket price that we sell it at, to a $1,200 CPA. Well, from a CEO perspective, what do you think? I'm thinking now that we have a $1,200, let's not spend $200,000 a month on Facebook. Let's spend $500,000 a month. Doesn't work like that because now you got logistical issues. So you have to be, you're always going to have challenges. And it's the people in this society that don't make it as an entrepreneur. The first sign of failure, they fold like a lawn chair, as opposed to, okay, this is a course correction. Sure. What do I need to do to go over, under, or through? And most people just aren't wired that way or just don't view life that way or don't have yet learned that skill set. Because I don't think I've always been that way. I just think over time I've learned that that's the only way to the end result is just never give up.
Sure. And what you're really saying, cliche. No, what you're really saying is having grit during those tough times because very few battles are won under ideal circumstances. And so being able to stick with it, not give up, keep going,
right.
Learn, adapt, pivot, whatever, keep going.
Yep.
Cool.
Good question. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for watching this episode of the podcast. Again, this is Matt DeLong with Real Life Trading. You should check them out. It's an amazing course where they teach average folks how to become day traders. And again, the biggest testimonial I have, because I've talked to a lot of their clients, is what do you do for a living? I'm a day trader. And it's a really cool life. Even myself as CEO of 7 different businesses, I'm jealous. That's what I want to be. That's why I'm buckling down in November, December to learn day trading. And you can too. Take care. God bless.